We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Dan, we've got breaking news!
You know I love it. You know I love breaking news.
We're announcing a new weekly show starting tonight.
Object to the text.
Tonight. Join us every Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific for a new experience here called College Football Thursdays, Dan, live on Spotify.
Yeah, we were going to call it College Football Thursdays no matter which day of the week. And we just got lucky. It's tonight. We're talking news. We're talking storylines. We're talking really whatever is happening in the college football universe. And the awesome news is that we're including you. We're bringing you up to the proverbial digital stage to hear from you in a way that we normally don't get to. You get to potentially, if you're right, put Ty in his place with some picks against the spread every week.
Here's what you do. Grab your phone. Step one. Step two, going out to solidverbal.com/Spotify. That'll get you over to our page. Once you're there, make sure you follow. Hit the notifications so that you don't miss any time we go live. It'll just ping you. Your phones can do that these days. Solidverbal.com/Spotify. College Football Thursdays. Again, it starts today, tonight, wherever you may be, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, live on Spotify.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo-woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal. Boys and girls, my name is Ty Hildenbrand. That fine gentleman over there, the one, the only, still the incomparable Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
I'm terrific. I'm drinking some tea. I want to ask for permission because I don't want to lay something on you without clearing it with you in advance.
Should we do our sponsor messaging first or?
Yeah, please do that. No, it's not. It won't affect the good folks at Geico.
This episode, all of our episodes driven by Geico, our good friends over at Geico. Subscribe to the show if you have yet to do so. If you've already taken that very important first step in becoming a Verballer, please encourage those who are close to you, acquaintances, Facebook friends, Twitter people in general, to come on over and subscribe to the show as well. Verballers.com is our Patreon where you can truly forge your own path in the Verballerhood, get access to bonus perks and be part of our Patreon community at large. That is VERBALLERS.com. And as we said at the very top of the show in our little mock pre-roll, go to SolidVerbalLive.com if you're interested in coming to see us live. The first live show, by the way, Fantasy Things, August the 27th at Beat Kitchen in Chicago, Illinois, your neck of the woods. So
yes.
with all that being said, you're going to ask for my permission on something.
Well, I just wanted to know if we can refer to USC as the valuable LA market and not as not as USC or the Trojans anymore. We're just like, what is the valuable LA market looking like at outside linebacker? What does the valuable LA market look like schedule wise? Because if that's what college football is telling us USC is.
Sure.
I want to take my cues from the sport, Ty. So, like, do you think Lincoln Riley sticks around the valuable LA TV market for a long time? Do you think the offensive line at the valuable LA TV market can live up to its, you know, PFF college grade scale? I just want to know, since your division, this is your direction. I don't want to start referring to USC as that, but I'm permission aboard.
Just remind me as we go through, because on all my notes here, I've got USC, Southern Cal, Lincoln, like all these points that we need to bring up.
Okay. Do you have any big picture Pac-12 South thoughts? And since we are doing this, technically
coming soon to a cinema near you,
under the guise of cinema and film and TV, were you inspired in a very specific way by the Pac-12 South?
I was, Dan. You know, okay. I gotta be honest. We came up with this concept now 9 episodes ago, and I don't think I quite had an appreciation for how difficult it would be to pair up a division with a movie. It seems like it should be easy, but it was actually kind of hard. It was a bit of a thought experiment. We had to stretch ourselves and get uncomfortable and come up with sounds. This one was not difficult for me. Because in looking over the Pac-12 South, what you realize very quickly is that this is a race between two teams.
Okay.
Two very different teams.
Cats. Let's do it, Ty. Come on.
Arizona State, of course. Well, of course those ridiculous. Are the two teams at the top of the Pac-12 South. No, yeah. It's Utah. It's USC. I'm thinking, all right, you got a two-team race here. Two very different squads. There's a lot on the line. It's changing. I'm thinking, could the stakes ever be higher than they are right now?
You did it.
Oh, I love that riff.
You and Harold.
All I want to do is learn to play that riff on the electric guitar, and that's it. I don't care if I don't need to learn the chords. Just teach me that riff and let me shred.
Ty, I think it's very simple. I think that's not a difficult riff. It's just like you could teach a 10-year-old in a few minutes to just look down awkwardly and with a pick.
I'm playing air guitar.
Yeah.
Oh, what a riff. Top Gun. It's Top Gun, Dan. It's Top Gun. It's Utah. It's USC.
You two characters are going to Top Gun.
Yeah.
We will define this a little bit further as we jump into our Pac-12 South preview, but I see this as a two-horse race. I think it's between Utah and USC. I don't know if I see it as particularly close between those two teams, but it's an interesting subject for us to discuss. And there are obviously many other points of intrigue across the Pac-12 South. Utah, with their obvious success, I think is what I want to pay the most attention to, but you've clearly got the UCLA storyline with Chip Kelly trying to build something. You've got the Arizona State dynamic, which is interesting for a number of reasons as well. The Colorado thing is kind of depressing. We touched on it a little bit when we had Dan Carlin from Hardcore History on the show. And then there's USC, which is USC has just been interesting for 1,000 different reasons over the last 6 to 8 months or so.
Surely you're pointing to a ton of just like crazy success on the field as the focal point of why they've been so interesting.
You mean the valuable LA market?
The valuable LA market. Sure, continue.
Yeah, not so much. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
And much, much more. So Top Gun is my go-by here for the Pac-12 South. Where are we going first?
Well, we started with Wazoo. We started with a wild card in the North. So let's start with whoever you consider to be, if you're considering Utah and USC to be your top guns.
Yeah. They are.
Who is your wild card plane? Who is your wild card commander? Who is your wild card? Look, they're not looking like they'll be as good as Utah and USC, but a couple of weird breaks, a little bit of injury luck gets you them as the champ in the South.
That will be Arizona State for me, Dan.
Oh, Okie doke. Wow. Didn't expect that answer.
that would be Arizona State for me.
Okay.
Arizona State 8-5 last year. For the purposes of this odd, albeit cumbersome comparison, Arizona State is kind of the goose of the storyline.
All right.
They are just in a very weird place.
You've lost that love and feeling.
Okay.
So I don't know where ASU is at as a program. It feels like they've lost a little bit of that Herm Edwards shine that came.
Yeah, I was going to say that love and feeling might be an entire football staff.
It's just not good. It's not good. So look, statistically speaking, this was like the best rushing offense in America last year. They're led by Rashad White, Jaden Daniels, Demontre Trainum. Now they're all gone. They're all gone, along with a bunch of other guys. It wasn't just those three. And I think we are in this moment now wondering when it's going to be Herm Edwards' turn to go. The loving feeling is gone, completely gone at ASU. There was a transfer exodus away from this program. There is a real sense that the ship is going down. The question for me is if Herm can possibly coach through those headwinds. I don't see it happening. I really don't. I think this is a foregone conclusion that he's gone after the season. Maybe doesn't even make it through the season. But why ASU is interesting is because there is that wild card quality here. The big caveat is that there's still talent on the roster. It is a full rebuild on offense. Don't confuse what I'm saying with they're loaded to the gills and they're going to be just fine. No, I'm not saying that. There is a lot of talent still on offense. Defensively, the cupboard isn't totally bare in the front seven. I get the sense that they could be better than people think. I wouldn't want to bet on that, okay? I'm not betting on that. But I just get the sense that so much of the narrative here around ASU has been about how the program's going down and there are NCAA investigations and coaches leaving and players transferring out. There's still enough there to be sort of dangerous. Not 10-win dangerous, but 8 wins, a pain in the ass, as we said on the last episode. Yeah, I kind of get that sense that there's enough here to be interesting. The quarterback is Emory Jones.
Yeah, I'll say the Emory Jones Blues explosion better be wailing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's either Emory Jones, who transfers in from Florida, or Paul Tyson, excuse me, who transfers in from Alabama, Daniel Nagata and Xavier Valade, who transfers down, will be the focal points of the offense as it relates to their backfield. They're going to be running behind a new line. There isn't much out wide to really take pressure off that running game. So, you know, how they are able to balance that and not put too much pressure on a running game, not put too much pressure on the quarterbacks, that part to me is a great unknown at this point. But I do think there is at least enough talent here across the board that it's interesting. The over-under is 5.5. I would not touch it with a 10-foot pole. I would not touch it with a 10-foot pole. I'm not saying bet on ASU. But I do
love the contradiction here. Continue.
It's weird to me. It's just this odd state of being with ASU where the narrative is horrible. And you could see it with your own eyes that things are going down. But it's hard to ignore the fact that there is still talent on that roster. I feel better about the over 5.5 than I do the under. They're on the road for the last 6 games of the season, which is clearly going to test their mettle. I do not know what state this program will be in by the time they get to that point in the season. It could have already been a house of cards and the whole thing collapsed by then. But also maybe it won't, you know? I really don't know. I'm not going to be able to give you a hot take here on ASU.
Excuse me. Sorry. No.
I'm not going to be able to give you a hot take because, honestly, all of the news about ASU is bad. The loving feeling is gone, but there is still talent. And I don't know how to kind of comprehend that.
I celebrate your ability to say, look, the following things are pretty suspect. Coaching staff, defense, offensive continuity.
I know what you're going to say. I know what you're going to say. Just say it.
But my counterpoint is, maybe it's not. I celebrate your ability to say, to plant your flag and say, this is my zag. The zig with the Sun Devils is everybody is racing to see who the fastest to leave Tempe is. But what my hypothesis presupposes is maybe not having a bunch of players is good. I don't know. Okay, they finished their season on the road a ton. 4 of 6, you said?
4 of 6, yeah. But it's at Stanford, at Colorado. I think they should be better than both those teams, okay?
Okay.
It's home against UCLA. We'll talk about UCLA. Maybe they've got a defense, maybe they don't. Wazoo? Wazoo's an open question. Tough place to play on the road. But we'll see. Oregon State, they may not play defense this year. And Arizona, that's a territorial cup game. Arizona will probably, I would probably bet on Arizona at home.
But okay.
Those are like some winnable games there, provided this team doesn't fall apart before then.
I love where you went with this. I love where you went with this because if you're wrong, you can just say, well, you asked for a wild card. But if you're right, it's only you.
It's only me.
Only you.
It's lonely up here at the top, Dan. Let me tell you this, though. I believe, I don't remember the year. Maybe you do. There was a year where I was one of the only people in like college football adjacent media to pick Arizona State to go to the playoff. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh. Vaguely, yeah.
It was me and like Kirk Herbstreit.
Yeah. Two heavyweights.
Thank you. Yeah. And I never lived that down. Never lived that down.
That's tough.
I am in a place with ASU, much like I am with TCU, where I never know from year to year what to expect from this team. They always do the opposite of whatever I expect. So this year I expect them to do poorly. I'm going to go against my better judgment, and I'm going to say this team could be better than you think. They could hit that over, and they could be the proverbial pain in the ass.
Have you ever been to an ASU game? They're pretty fun.
I've been to Tempe. I haven't been to a game.
Okay. Okay. They're pretty fun. And since they stopped playing midday games in September when it's 100,000 degrees, it's even better. And plenty of good seats in the student section available after halftime, usually. They all leave to go out, and I don't blame them. That's a good time. So I appreciate you going out on a limb there. Can I ask you something as an easy way to transition to our next team?
Please.
Why ASU as a wild card South champ over UCLA?
Champ? Whoa.
Yeah.
I didn't say champ.
That's what my question was. I said if things break in a weird way and they get lucky with injuries and other people don't, this is the wild card team. That's what my Wazoo point was.
Oh my gosh.
That if Cam Ward is incredible.
Oh my gosh.
And they get after the passer. Oh, you regret everything.
No.
Okay, that was my question.
No. They are not. I mean, if you want to put me on that pedestal, fine. But no, they're not winning the Pac-12 South. I don't mean that.
Well, that was my question. That's what made it so confusing for me.
But in terms of a wild card team that could sneak up on you and beat you when you don't expect, that's a wild card.
My man, I said wild card champ.
Okay. Well, we had a misunderstanding.
You regret that. Everything.
I
you have the worst
that.
Effing
I'm not
lawyers.
Saying, please don't post that to Reddit or anywhere that I said.
Okay.
That.
So
that is not what I mean.
Here's then my pivot question transitioning.
Okay.
Why not UCLA as a wild card, really good team if things break their way, if not champion? Why did you choose to highlight ASU rather than UCLA in that wild card titling?
Arizona State is a team that enters this season without virtually any expectations. And because I think they could be a little bit better than most people think, because I do believe on some level that they could be that pain in the ass team that hangs around and beats you when they're not supposed to. That to me is a definition of a wild card.
Okay.
UCLA went 8-4 last year.
Yeah.
This is not a team that I think is going to sneak up on people at this point. Certainly not with their offense. This is a tremendous half team last season. 8-4. Started off their season by pounding Hawaii in week 0. And then beating LSU in week 1. And I remember back in that moment, we did our recap show and we said, is Chip Kelly back?
Uh-oh.
Chip Kelly's chipper. Is he back? Back to Oregon form? No. The answer is no. The short answer is no.
The Oregon defenses were pretty good when he was there, yeah.
He has progressively made this offense better, specifically Dorian Thompson Robinson, DTR. Every year he's been there, they've gotten better. They finished 8-4 mainly because of the defense. That was and still is the big issue for this team. The story this year is turnover. Hopefully not with the football, but in terms of personnel on offense, DTR and Zach Charbonnet are back, which is good, but they lose Greg Dulcich, who's a big tight end. They lose Kyle Phillips, another target. A good chunk of the line is also gone, including Sean Ryan, who was like first team all Pac-12. On defense, they lose their top three defensive linemen, their top three linebackers, both starting corners and two safeties.
Yeah.
I almost ran out of breath.
They lost a lot. And that happened after Chip and Jerry Azzanaro, the defense coordinator, parted ways. Yeah.
You see me shrugging over here. That's why. I don't see this defense getting any better with this level of churn. It's just really hard to envision. That was a weak pass defense to begin with. You introduce this kind of turnover in the personnel department, it's hard to see it getting much better. Even though UCLA had a good enough success rate with guys transferring in, they tried it again here. They got the Murphy brothers, Gabriel and Grayson, who come over.
Is that
from
North Texas?
North Texas,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, not bad. Not bad. They've got guys from Hawaii and from Washington and Wyoming coming in as well. They're actively trying to plug the gaps. I give them credit on that front because 9 of their top 12 in terms of snap counts are gone from the defensive side of the football. So keeping in mind, this was really an area of need. They need to get better. They lost a lot. They're trying to plug gaps as quick as they can, but it's just hard for me to find a reason why they're going to take a quantum leap forward. Offensively, they'll be fine. They'll be fine on offense, even though there's some turnover there. It's Chip Kelly. You know, you could put 11 comp sci majors out there and he would find a way to still score 25 a game or something.
Sure.
And they did some work on the portal, by the way, on the offensive side as well. Jake Bobo is a name who comes over from Duke, who I think they're pretty high on. And Raekwon O'Neal comes over from Rutgers to help with some of the churn along their offensive line. But it's going to be a question of defense. The schedule is super workable. And because of that, this team could be worse than they were a year ago and still finish with the same record.
How seduced would you say you are by the DTR experience? In the experience that he has running this offense, the fact that he was the quarterback for a really good national offense last year, that his numbers are pretty good, but if you watch him,
no,
you're like, oh, I don't know if I would love for him to be my team's quarterback for years upon years. That, like, I think there is a contradiction between the DTR bottom line stat wise and UCLA's offensive success and what he brings to and removes from the table as a longtime quarterback starter.
He's been
beat up. There's reasons, but yeah.
Yeah, of course. There's a big difference between, and I'll throw Ian Book in there as someone who made me feel
sure.
Similarly. Ian Book had that job locked down going into his final season. And as a Notre Dame fan, you felt okay about that. Okay, the quarterback spot is locked down. We don't have to worry about any kind of turnover there, breaking somebody new in, freshman mistakes, that type of thing. It feels good to have that kind of veteran presence in the huddle. But also, you know there's a ceiling. You know there's a ceiling. DTR has gotten better under Chip Kelly, and hopefully he can continue to do so this coming season. It helps to have that veteran presence, given the fact that there is so much turnover on offense. But in terms of somebody who I'm seeing as taking UCLA to the moon and maybe winning the South, no. Ultimately, I don't think he is that type of quarterback. He's just good enough to kind of lock that spot down and give Chip some options, right? He's a
right.
guy who can run. You can do a lot with him. It's just there is definitely a downside that you can't ignore.
Yeah, I think my criticism of UCLA in years past was just the inability to find and develop receivers to sort of round out this offense and change the calculus downfield and gravitationally or whatever. And they full on got worse at receiver this offseason. They took a defense which was not at all good. And the reason, as you mentioned, for the majority of their losses, if not all of them, and guys left and were replaced by. And like I love replacing guys with G5, like, oh, maybe this star was a star in the waiting and just not playing at the right level or whatever. But like, how many Khalil Macks are there?
Yeah.
How many of those guys are there truly? If you're talking about Rutgers, Duke, and North Texas transfers on both sides of the ball being difference makers, that's the concern to me, that at this point, this many years into his tenure, into Chip's tenure at UCLA, that he hasn't recruited better out of LA. He hasn't developed quarterbacks in the way that he was able to at Oregon, that, you know, he obviously hired the wrong guy to be his defensive coordinator, and that year over year, there just seems to be a bunch of guys leaving.
Yeah.
That's worrisome. So I have them, I understand the optimism. I have them at best 8-4, probably a 7-5 type team.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Dan.
It's just hard to get worse along the lines and get better.
They could be worse, but because the schedule is workable, still finish with that 8-win mark.
There's the catastrophic defense thing as well, right? That they're going to be, no matter who, what side of the conference they play in. I mean, they have Colorado. They have Arizona. They could have your wild card champion, Arizona State.
Stop it.
They could be playing a number of horrendous defenses, and that's just enough to get to 7-8 wins.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I don't like we could talk about USC, but I don't like
market.
UCLA that much this year because they have not done really anything to address that glaring question, that blinking red light that is their catastrophic defense, as you phrased it.
Yeah, I wouldn't go full catastrophic. I don't know what the numbers say they were last year, but it was definitely a reason that teams were in games that they shouldn't have been in, even in UCLA wins. So, no, I get the optimism because of the top of that offense, but I just, how many games can they score 47 points in? That's the problem.
Yeah. All right, where do you want me to go next?
Let's stay in town in that valuable LA TV market and talk about the valuable LA TV market.
USC. USC, 4-8 last year. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I definitely can. It was definitely something I could look back and say,
4-8 last season. They lost in week 2 to Stanford. That gave them license, along with, I guess, the previous 3 years to get rid of Clay Helton. You'll remember us questioning all offseason how long of a leash he would get. And the answer was none. He got no leash. They lost to Stanford, and then it was done. And really from that point forward, USC became sort of the most interesting story in college football, certainly in the offseason going into the 2022 season. USC, in this odd analogy, is Maverick.
He's a wild card. Flies by the seat of his pants. Completely unpredictable.
Feels like USC to me. You know, we've had expectations for this program for a while. They obviously took a big swing here. Gave Lincoln Riley a king's ransom to leave Norman, Oklahoma. Looks like he bought a nice house with it. Doesn't have a helipad, though. I'm a little disappointed. No helipad.
Oh. I mean, he's probably traveling to downtown from wherever he is, Rolling Hills Estates, early enough where he'll beat traffic.
I'm assuming it's got an infinity pool. I didn't see that, though.
Right.
But gave him a king's ransom. And now, because of all the dust he has kicked up, USC is getting crazy hype again. USC, if you can believe it, is 20-1 to win the national championship. That is ahead of Utah. Utah is 80-1.
Yeah.
Notre Dame is 60-1. USC, maybe only because Vegas needs to protect itself a little bit from bets coming in. 20-1, that is the fifth lowest odds behind Georgia, behind Alabama, Ohio State, maybe Clemson as well. So expectations are really high for USC. There is still a wild card quality. There's still a Maverick quality here to the Trojans, because you know that if they are running optimally, if they are converting on all of the talent that they have access to, if they're able to get that defense in order and get Caleb Williams and, you know, its cast of characters playing at a really high level, you could totally see the upside here. I mean, it jumps off the page at you. It's very exciting. But also, it might be a bit unrealistic given where we're at right now with USC football. So here's the rub. Lincoln Riley comes over, gets a ton of money, lands the number one transfer class in the nation. This was free agency. This was free agency in college football. He's got the transfer at quarterback in Caleb Williams. He's got two running backs who came over, Travis Dye and Austin Jones. He's got four wide receivers in the form of Mario Williams, Jordan Addison, Terrell Bynum, Brendan Rice, Jerry Rice's kid who comes over from Colorado. The skill talent has all been upgraded in a really big way. Really big, headline-grabbing way. And then they took a few more transfers in on defense as well to give the linebacking core a boost. That momentum had been very tangible, and it has translated through to the regular recruiting department, which has also been very strong. So a lot of steam on USC right now. A lot of steam. It's going to help them this season. It's certainly going to help them in the recruiting game, both high school recruiting and transfer recruiting in the future. But I emphasize moving forward, because there are areas that weren't upgraded. And those happen to be all the areas where USC could have really used an upgrade.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, it helps to get a better quarterback and all those great skill positions. But what about the offensive line, Dan?
Yeah.
You know, they're starting experience along the line, but they didn't do enough to boost it, in my opinion. So it's not like this is an overnight rebuild for the new offensive line. Like, it's going to take a while to get there. Typically, offensive lines are not the kind of thing that you can just snap your fingers and suddenly fix. It takes time.
Yeah, the offensive line was actually okay last year. It had gone a run of not being great. And I don't think, you know, they had the NFL draft talent the couple years before that. But it was sort of lost in that it was kind of a wasted season and they weren't playing a ton of great defenses. But I think it had been worse before last year. When you look at what they were able to do against Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game that year and in some big moments, they were certainly let down. But I don't know, the underlying numbers are like they were good in protecting both Jackson Dart and Keaton Slovis last year. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with the type of offense they were running. That the ball is out pretty
quickly. Air raid stuff.
So it's hard to fully gauge, but they ran the ball better than they had been last year. They ran the ball better. And it's, you know, it's transfers and whatever. Once again, I think the offensive line is okay, but I think your underlying point of they would have been wise to try to upgrade is not wrong.
It's not all bad. We're not talking half offense the way we talk about a UCLA half team with its defense, right? To say the line's a catastrophe would be going a little bit too far. But look at what they did in the red zone. They got like no push in the red zone at all. That's when you need to get that push up front.
True.
The other thing that I will call out here with USC or the valuable LA TV market, as I've been led to believe, the defense. Last year, the defense collapsed. They were terrible. I think they'll be okay up front. There's enough back to be okay. At linebacker, they lose Drake Jackson. He's tough to replace. They did take in two more transfers from Bama and ASU, as I mentioned earlier, to help fill out that linebacking core. I'm worried about the cornerback spot. This is, again, another situation, in this case for Alex Grinch, that is not an overnight fix. I'm not an Alex Grinch evangelist. I'm just not. I think he's fine. I wonder if he's the right guy for the job or not. I guess we'll find out. But I do think it's going to take more time on that defensive side of the ball. This is not a Utah situation, you know, where this thing is set in stone and they're going to be just fine. There's a track record. And, you know, USC's had a problem defensively with toughness. You read what other coaches say, they get pushed around. So, again, new system, new frame of mind, a lot of momentum on this program, a lot of shiny new toys. But the underlying stuff for me is the offensive line needs to get better to support that offense. And certainly on defense, they got to figure this out because they were bad last season. So what am I saying? Will USC be better? 100% they will be better. 100%. The influx of skill talent, it's amazing. It'll make them fun to watch. They will continue to be one of the more interesting storylines in college football. But the shiny new toys also paper over some of the underlying stuff that I do think will ultimately get in their way. Defense in particular, a pretty big open question for me. So would I bet on USC at 20-1? No. I mean, come on. No. Vegas has the over-under at 9.5. I think because the schedule's favorable, if you want to bet on USC winning 10 games, be my guest. I don't want any part of that bet. I'm not going anywhere near that. Not just because of some of the pre-existing stuff that I discussed here, but just like it's a lot of transfers, man. It takes a minute sometimes for that to gel and work together. And all-star teams don't always play great together at first blush. So in looking at this, there's a chance they could lose to Stanford in week two again.
No, there's not. There's 1,000% not a chance. Speak. In a universe that is based in reality, get out of here with that.
I don't know. I'm not as high on USC as apparently Vegas is. And I think they'll be fun as hell. 8-4, 9-3 is my thing for USC.
Okay. You're making me be a counterpart about the LA TV market with this, which is not my usual place to be. They should have the best offense in the conference. Yes, because of that kind of firepower, because of Lincoln Riley's experience helping to develop quarterbacks, certainly behind better offensive lines, the best of his offensive lines at Oklahoma, or I presume better than where USC's will be this year. But I'm saying USC's line will be good enough for this offense to do what it intends to do, which is get the ball to speed, which will be run more successfully. Travis Dye is a really good running back.
He is.
Travis Dye, was he the offensive player of the year in the Pac-12 last year as a backup for Oregon? He was in that conversation if he wasn't. I don't have that in front of me. And so he's experienced and not a huge dude, doesn't have huge top-end speed, but good. He's a good running back, and I think he's going to take the majority of the carries there, and a lot of running backs have succeeded in Lincoln Riley's offense. Is this the best receiver duo in the conference? Yes. Is it the best receiver duo in the country? Possibly.
Probably. Yeah.
And then you look at the defenses on USC's schedule. Now, you can say, okay, they're going to lose something dumb, but to whom? To whom exactly are they going to, like, losing to Utah and Notre Dame, no shame in that. These are teams that are much farther along in terms of overall talent on both sides of the ball than everybody else on USC's regular season schedule. So, if USC is merely as good-ish as they should be, they're winning 10 games. Plus, you're penciling in Tyler Buchner, and I know Utah's on the road, but I think if USC's offense is really, really good, they can beat Utah.
I think Utah is going to push USC around.
Totally.
And I think Utah is going to win that game. The Notre Dame game is in LA, and I think by that point in time, hopefully Notre Dame will have itself figured out. Organized, presumably around Tyler Buchner. They should also be solid on both sides of the ball. USC will have a full season under its belt at that point, too. But I do think that I like Notre Dame in that matchup. And again, coming back to what I said before, it's great to have these high profile transfers. It's a lot to assume that they will all mesh right away. So
I agree.
If you told me that USC went to Oregon State and got into a shootout and lost, I could see that.
Sure.
I could see that
absolutely
happening.
But what I think my broader point is, there's like 1.5 to 2 complete teams in this conference.
Sure.
Right now, like, Oregon State does not have the defense to run with USC. They might have the corners too, but I don't think they're the linebackers. I think they're just, everybody's going to be a mismatch for Jordan Addison, Mario Williams, and Travis Dye, and Caleb Williams with the ball in his hands, throwing it or running it. So I don't think they would succeed in the Big Ten this year if they were a Big Ten team this year. I don't think they would succeed in the SEC. But with this schedule, I think I'm a little bit higher on SC as like 9-3, 10-2 rather than 8-4, 9-3. Like, I think I'm just a tier, a level above. Just because it's going to be pretty difficult for them to lose these games. Now, look, I don't love their defensive line. I don't like their linebackers. I don't like their secondary. I think there's a lot of work to be done. I think, you know, having the recruiting class a couple of years ago where they just bombed out, like, they're still feeling that even with the portal stuff. Like, they were not able to develop guys on defense at all to any sort of impressive degree. And 5 stars, 4 stars, guys, blue chip guys. And so the depth just isn't there, and the success that they had in the portal was not up front on defense, which is sorely needed if you are a quote-unquote playoff contender. So I think USC is going to be really good. I just think they're going to be especially flawed. But that said, they can beat Utah. They can beat Notre Dame. Like, this should be a really impressive offense. I think you're selling the LA TV market a little bit short.
Maybe I am, but you know what? I don't care.
Okay.
I'm out on USC as a 10-win team this year. Will they get there soon? Yeah. Yeah, of course they're going to get there soon. Lincoln Riley's a good coach. Ask the people at Oklahoma. They loved him. They would love to have him back.
Sure. Yeah.
But no, I think they're in a really good place. I think by virtue of him hitting the portal as hard as he did via free agency, we'll just call it what it is, he definitely reduced the time that it will take to rebuild that program. He has jump-started it by kicking up so much dust. He's done a really good job in a short period of time. I don't want to undersell that. I just think it's a lot to ask that they're going to suddenly become a 10-win team. Even with the name brand skill talent that he brought in, I don't trust the line as much as you do, and I still have questions about the defense. So
okay.
I'm out.
Well, I don't know what their current line looks like. I was just saying last year's line wasn't as terrible as, you know, some of the lines that came before.
Yeah.
My final point with the valuable LA TV market, if they go 7-5, if things go poorly, if things go really, really poorly, and the transfers and the culture, like, it's, you know, it's tough to build, as you've alluded to, it's tough to build a culture from scratch with pulling guys in from everywhere and the way things ended last year and the amount of apathy it seemed that there was in that locker room. The what went wrong with USC going 7-5 column from, call it Antonio Morales. It's going to be great. I know I just clipped. My audio just clipped and it was worth it.
That's a full year of Bill Plaschke articles right there.
Yeah, I don't see it happening, though. I think USC is going to be, I think they're going to be good to very good with clear flaws that are keeping them from one of the top two tiers of the sport.
Dan, before we go any further, this is just a casual reminder. We are running out of tickets. For the Chicago live show on August the 27th at Beat Kitchen. We told you from the very start it was only going to be an intimate gathering of trusted verballers. Well, we're just about at capacity. So listen, if you want tickets, go on out now. SolidVerbalLive.com. Buy enough for you and a friend. Come on out. We're doing the Live Fantasy Things Draft, which is maybe our most favorite show that we do throughout the entire calendar year. SolidVerbalLive.com is where you go. Get your tickets now before they are all gone.
The event of the Solid Verbal social calendar. And if you need something snappier to remember in terms of a URL, also, smellticeshair.com has officially been registered as a forwarding link. I did buy it. You can look it up right now. Look it up.
What are you signing me up for?
Smellticeshair.com. .com, spelled exactly as you suppose it would be.
SolidVerbalLive.com is a preferred URL to buy your tickets. There are alternate means to get there. One way or another, just make sure you're there in Chicago, August the 27th at Beat Kitchen. We're excited to draft some fantasy things before a live Verballer audience. Come on out. We'd love to hang. Shall we talk about the true Top Gun in the Pac-12 South?
Let's.
The Top Gun comparison to me fit. And then I went back and I started listening to quotes from the actual movie, the original 1986 movie. And I found this one when they were talking about Iceman. Listen to this.
It's the way he flies, ice cold, no mistakes. It just wears you down. You get bored, frustrated, do something stupid, and he's got you.
Is that not Utah? Is that not Utah?
Ruthless efficiency?
Yeah.
Yeah, it for sure is.
Utah is Iceman. Utah is the actual Top Gun in the Pac-12 South. 10-4 last season, 9-1 in conference. It was a good year with odd quirks because they started 1-2. They lost to both BYU and San Diego State. And that's when Kyle Whittingham pulled the plug on Chaz Brewer. You'll remember him. Chaz Brewer now.
Still active. Still active. An active college football quarterback. Yeah.
Transferred in from Baylor. Tried it for a couple games. That didn't work. So at that point, they turned it over to Cam Rising, who had transferred in from Texas. It was like night and day. The only conference loss from that point forward was in the middle of the season at Oregon State. They ripped off their final six games. They won the conference. They got a pass to the Rose Bowl. It might have been the game of bowl season against Ohio State. They lost 48-45, that shootout game where Jackson Smith and Jigba and CJ Stroud went off. But that was a fun game. By any stretch.
Oh, yeah. A running back in at corner, Micah Bernard.
Yeah, unbelievable. What makes this team truly unique in the Pac-12 is their physicality. And, you know, Oregon, you know this, right? Oregon was trying to be more physical under Mario Cristobal, and they did a good job of getting there. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, Oregon lost 76-17 combined in the two meetings with Utah last season. The Utes.
Unfamiliar.
Yeah, the Utes were and still are on a different level when it comes to toughness and physicality. And you're going to see it again this year. You'll see it again this year. They will be a handful for Pac-12 teams to deal with because they're so damn physical. That's why I'm picking them. And we can get into the nitty gritty here, but that's why I'm picking them to win this division, this conference. If they beat Florida, as an addendum here, if they beat Florida in week one, there will be playoff hype on top of it. Now, I'm not sure how Utah deals with that. But if they go to Florida in week one and they win that game, which is a real possibility, then we're talking to our kids about Utah football. I'm real high on this team.
So, the reasons to really believe in Utah far outweigh concerns. Because there's a case to be made that with a transfer quarterback, with the amount of youth they had on last year's defense, that it wasn't rebuilding, but it was a sort of regrouping year for Utah. And yet, they took advantage of a down conference and a flawed Oregon team whose coach, in my view, committed to Miami probably early summer last year.
Yep.
That's unfair. But nonetheless, I'm allowed to be bitter. I worry about the same thing I worry about with Utah most seasons. And I mentioned it with UCLA. And it wasn't a true concern because I don't think Utah has come into a season with this level of expectation as they have now. Have they been a preseason favorite pick before? Maybe. I just don't recall.
Not to this extent, though. Not to the extent where we're talking about them as a potential playoff team before the season starts. No.
It seems their weakness is USC's strength. And I don't know who that's good for. That USC has winter wonders out wide and Utah is going into the season saying, man, we might have the best tight end duo in the conference, which they might. They definitely, or they do. I don't know. That the ways in which they can win, and you mentioned this on a previous episode, when you try to play that kind of physical ball, and Andy Ludwig has been an overall pretty successful offensive coordinator for Utah against all of my protests and other saying otherwise. It's when they need to score, when they need to take advantage of a secondary, when they need to keep two safeties back, who is that receiver to do so?
Yeah.
You may have an answer. Well, Utah may have an answer. That's just my question.
So tell me if this sounds familiar, because I thought of the same thing and I was trying to find some comps. Does this sound familiar? Quarterback who completed 64% of his passes, was responsible with the football, rushed for about 8 yards per carry, so he's mobile. Really good line, power running game, and an offense that's going to lean on its tight ends as the primaries in the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking the best of Wisconsin, I guess? I don't know.
You're talking Georgia.
Or, well, yeah.
Okay. And maybe I'm being overly simplistic, but it's worked before. Utah is like Georgia, very, very diet Georgia.
Yeah, I was like, well, there's no George Pickens. There's no Jermaine Burton. There's no Ladd McConkey. That's the problem is,
but
technically speaking, Georgia had those guys who could sometimes make those plays.
But you see the point of comparison, right?
Totally.
It's a physical offense that's going to beat your brains in on the ground. They're going to isolate Brant Keithy, the tight end that you referenced in the pass game. They're going to line him up out wide in the slot, wherever. It does hurt to lose Britton Covey.
Oh, my God. He finally finished?
Yeah, he's finally done.
Oh, my God.
It does hurt to lose him. He wasn't necessarily that guy that you're describing who is a gravitational player, the problem, what have you. But he was the utility guy. He did a little bit of everything in this offense. I don't know if there's an obvious solution to replace a guy like that. There are options. And pretty much the entire wide receiving core is back, other than Britton Covey. But I take your point, and I think it's fair. But I don't know if that is key to Utah's success this season. I think they're fine playing the physical brand of football until they can figure out what to do out wide. I think Cam Rising gives them something that they haven't had in a while, and that is a quarterback who can do a lot more, who raises the floor, raises the ceiling, you know, kind of in one fell swoop. So, you know, maybe they'll find ways to develop those targets around him. I should mention that Tavian Thomas was a revelation last season at running back. And without his physicality, an offense like this doesn't work as well. He had 1,100 yards, 21 touchdowns on the ground. I think he is poised for a big year. They got to keep him healthy, but he was a workhorse. And behind this line, you know, I expect big things from him again. So that's kind of what we should look for from Utah on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, if you were going to lob a concern at Utah, defensively is kind of where I would go with it, because they lose some big names. Devin Lloyd, first round pick, Mike Tafua, Nephi Sewell, Vontae Davis, Brandon McKinney, they're all gone off this defense. The Utes are 88th in returning production, for whatever that's worth, on the defensive side of the ball. So the question switches to Kyle Whittingham, Morgan Scalley on defense. Can they replace that much turnover? History would suggest yes. I'm under the assumption that they will. But that's a lot to lose, right? If I'm going to make that concern public about other programs that lose a lot on defense, you know, you have to mention it about Utah as well. And I think it's an open question. Utah is going to have to go up against that wide receiver duo.
Yep.
From USC. The secondary features Clark Phillips, Cole Bishop, two guys who are all conference caliber.
I was going to say, Clark Phillips is probably the best corner in the conference.
They'll probably be okay.
Yeah.
They are only two guys. And of course, you need support from the other nine guys around you. I think up front, they'll be solid. I linebacker is really the only true concern I have because you lose Devin Lloyd and you got to plug in other guys around.
She's so good.
But I don't have the concern with the defense given the track record here. So I eagerly await that matchup with USC's wide receivers and these corners out wide who I think are legit. But with all the losses elsewhere on defense, it's a fair concern. The schedule for Utah is exactly what they need in order to be an actual playoff team to get into the playoff, because they've got the big non-con game on the road at Florida week one. You win that game, suddenly everyone's talking. They're at Oregon in week 12, which is not a picnic. They've got USC at home, which is nice for them. There's no run of games here that really scares me. Good buffers.
Their October is tricky, I would
say. It's tricky. It's tricky. But I don't know. I just think this team with the brand of football that they play is in a good spot. The over-under is 8.5, which I'd take in a heartbeat. I would take that in a heartbeat. You'll hear that again maybe next episode when we do over-unders. But I think it's 10-2 or 11-1 for these guys. I don't see them going worse than 9-3. I'm all in on Utah this year.
How many losable games are on this schedule? Because remember, they're on a current losing streak to Oregon State. So that game is losable.
Yeah. I think Florida's losable.
Yep.
USC's losable. Oregon's losable. Outside of that, I don't know if there are any others on. They could lose a dumb one. Everyone's got that in them.
Like they did last year. Yeah.
Except Georgia or Alabama.
Yeah. Alabama kind of lost a dumb one last year.
Kind of lost A&M. Okay, sure.
That was not that A&M wasn't good, but the manner in which they lost was kind of just ridiculous in terms of the ups and downs. I think Utah's a 10-2 team. I think it's going to be tricky. I think they're the best team in the Pac-12. I think they are. The depth is a question for me. When I know they were thin and beat up at corner last year when they had to put in their third string running back in at corner. Those types of moves worry me. Yeah. Not for most teams, but if you're starting to talk about capital P playoff contender, but they haven't built depth everywhere yet, that's where you lose me. Granted, Pac-12, and it probably doesn't take much if they're lucky injury-wise, but not many teams are. So that's the worry for me. I have them at about 10-2. So I have them at the over as well. That number, though, is a little bit concerning.
It is.
It almost feels like steer into it and go under. They go 8-4.
I just don't see it on the schedule. I don't see it on the schedule here. I think there's enough back, certainly on offense, where they'll be solid. They'll be able to play that physical brand of football. I don't know how many teams in the schedule are going to be able to contend with that.
We forgot to mention, and I'll mention it in a little while, they are playing one of the like 12 or 14 best defenses in the country, and we didn't even mention it, San Diego State, who beat them last year.
Now, they beat them.
That was a Chaz Brewer game. I understand that. But like, is this a team who can muck things up enough to beat a more talented team? I say probably not, but I'm not at 100% because the offense is going to be run by, wait for it, Ty, a Braxton Burmeister.
Right.
So that's the issue for me. But also, they just play defense better than everybody on this schedule. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Continue.
I just look at the schedule and, you know, I mean, you could speak better to Oregon and what they've got coming back up front, but I feel pretty confident that they're going to be able to push USC, that they're going to be able to push UCLA, Oregon State, Arizona State, Washington State, Arizona. All of these teams are Colorado. They're going to beat their brains in with the style of offense that they run.
Yeah.
They're going to beat their brains in, Dan.
You love that phrase this episode.
It makes me feel masculine.
I could. A very masculine child.
Yeah.
If Oregon is good to really good, Autzen will be electric, what I assume will be a nighttime game for Utah. And they won't lose in the manner that they lost to Mario Cristobal, or that they lost with Mario Cristobal. If and or when they lose, it will be because Utah's really good and Cam Rising beats them, and the running backs are really good and fast, and the defense is fast, and Clark Phillips comes up. They will win, but they will not be humiliated and demoralized early in the same way.
Yeah.
That's all. I can't wait for that game if Oregon is indeed as good as I think they'll probably be. That'd be great.
Two final teams in the Pac-12 South, Colorado, 4-8 last year. We had Dan Carlin on from Hardcore History, noted Colorado alum and Colorado fan. That fatalistic college football vibe that you picked up from Mr. Carlin, that was partially forged in the flames of Colorado's season last year.
Yeah.
I'll be very direct because we're all friends. I believe people want to hear the truth. Here is what Colorado's dealing with. Best running back, Jarek Broussard. Top two wide receivers, all transferred out. They hired Mike Sanford. Yeah, to fix the offense. Nate Landman, who was a mainstay on defense, is gone. Carson Wells gone at linebacker. Christian Gonzalez, Mekhi Blackman gone from the secondary, cornerback. The Baby Buffs, as I'm going to refer to them all year, have the least returning production of any Pac-12 defense. Their over-under is 3.5, and their schedule looks awful.
Yeah.
There is a legit chance of 0-12.
Man.
I am not rooting for it.
Yeah.
But look at the schedule and tell me otherwise. There is a legit chance they go 0-12 this year.
I'm going to pull it up.
I'm going to root for Brendan Lewis and JT Shroud, whoever's playing quarterback.
Yeah, they're thin at quarterback.
RJ Sneed comes over from Baylor. He's a fun guy. He's a fine talent.
Yeah. They got an offensive lineman. Is it Tommy Brown from Alabama? They got a Bama former four-star, five-star offensive lineman.
Look at that schedule and tell me there isn't a chance of 0-12.
Their most winnable games will be New Look TCU, maybe, week one. Arizona on the road, Cal, Arizona State if they're a disaster. We'll see with Washington, but that game's in Seattle. And they finish hosting Utah. Yeah, I think they're going to win. I don't know. I think they'll go 2-10. Yeah, it's the guys leaving that left specifically. Good defensive players. Mekhi Blackman, I believe he's, a DB going to SC, and Christian Gonzalez to Oregon. Brendan Rice also to USC. It's just that they're so thin that they lost their quarterback. They're thin at quarterback. I actually I'm not an expert on this, but I've heard that Carl Durrell is quietly doing an interesting job in the portal. Not in the portal, on the recruiting trail. Mm. That doesn't really help right now against this schedule.
No.
So their non-conference is what? Air Force, TCU, and who did I see? Minnesota? Yeah, Minnesota. Air Force and Minnesota on the road. At altitude, Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado Springs. Yeah, man. Oh. So I guess, what is their actual Vegas over-under?
Vegas over-under is 3.5. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Well, no, it sounds like you would.
No. No.
You wouldn't even confidently go under?
Oh, under?
Yeah.
I'm saying I wouldn't go over with a 10-foot
pole. Oh, no, I know. But like that number, no. Would you confidently go under?
Oh, my God, yeah.
So that's touching it with your 10-foot pole. Congratulations.
I wouldn't touch the over with a 10-foot pole.
Oh, of course. But you can bet unders as well.
I don't like betting unders. It's sort of a buzzkill.
Too pessimistic.
I don't want to root against teams, you know?
I don't know. That sort of defines your Notre Dame fandom in a certain way.
In a certain way, it does, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So are there bright spots? Are there like, oh, they can win four games if X, Y, and Z happen, right? If JT Shroud, or like, are there guys who could pop?
No.
Okay.
They're not winning four games.
I tried.
They're not winning four games. RJ Sneed's a fine player.
Yeah.
And maybe Brendan Lewis or JT Shroud can get him the ball and he can move around in space.
It's tough.
No, they're not winning four games.
All right, let's talk Cardiac Cats. Come on, let's do it.
Let's talk Cardiac Cats. Sorry, Colorado people. You're very nice people.
Yeah.
But that's just how I
shout out Pearl Street. Shout out, what did I eat? Snarfs.
Snarf
sandwiches.
Come on.
Totally good.
Who doesn't like Snarfs? Okay. Yeah. Arizona, 1-11 last year. Bear down. Bear down. Bear was literally down last year. 1-11. It was the first year for Jed Fish. I distinctly remember not liking the hire at all. because what was the scuttlebutt going into the season? Well, did they really want him? Did the president just want to hire him? It seemed like there was a rift there of sorts, and Jed Fish was maybe not a super popular hire within. I feel like we're in a much different place with Jed Fish this season. There's optimism. All right. There is optimism abound in Tucson. The theme that I have gone with on a couple occasions when we do these previews is the quote unquote logical plan thing. You know, I talked about it with Mel Tucker and Greg Schiano and Eli Drinkwitz, guys where it's just you look at what they're doing and you're not necessarily expecting a national championship or conference championship caliber season, but you see what they're doing, what they're building, who they're adding, who they're bringing in, and it just makes sense. That's how I feel about Jed Fish. It feels like Jed Fish is doing things that are logical. He's being very targeted in the portal. Last year's quarterback situation, objectively a disaster.
Yeah, not great.
What's he do? He goes out and he gets Jaden Delora from Wazoo. That's a pretty good move. Who's he throwing to?
Oh, this hurts, man. Continue.
How about Jacob Cowing from UTEP?
They brought in arguably, if he's not the best receiver, maybe that was Evan Stewart, whatever, in the recruiting class, but one of the best seven receivers, four receivers, who was committed to Oregon. And then when Mario Cristobal left, he decommitted. T-Mac, Teratoa McMillan? I don't know how to pronounce it. I'll get there.
To Tyro McMillan.
I am positive this dude is going to be otherworldly.
Yeah.
And it is infuriating. Come transfer to Eugene at some point. That's tampering, Ty. He was my favorite part. I don't really look at Oregon recruiting until later on in the process, until the fall. And then I kept seeing updates and I was texting Brandon Hoffman. He was like, this guy's something else. This, like where he's like, he had three touchdown catches and like two pick sixes in the same game where he's just like this magnet for the ball. And then like early reports out of spring ball were like the first day of practice, he caught 3 one-handed deep balls. We're like, okay, this hurts.
And he goes by T-Mac.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
in addition to Jacob Cowing, who comes over from UTEP, they got T-Mac, the 4-star receiver out of California. I believe California, right?
Yeah. Yeah. From Southern California.
Really big get in the recruiting game. You consider that the running back room is back, led by Michael Wiley. This is a sneaky decent offense. Sneaky decent.
Could be.
They have to assemble the pieces. They have to do it quickly. But it is certainly better than it was a year ago, and it's been very targeted. Jed Fish, I think, did a good job. The line, you know, I mean, the line's a horse of a different color, Dan.
Yeah, I think they're still like a 3-win team, but they're going to be one of the more fun. They're going to be this year's Nebraska.
They gave up a ton of sacks. They were bad in the red zone. But that's the main question on offense. I think he did a good job assembling those pieces. Defensively, Don Brown left. He's now in charge up at UMass. So it's a new defensive coordinator, Johnny Nansen from UCLA.
Yeah.
Going to switch up the scheme a little bit. But the big deal with him is he's going to help a lot in the recruiting game. He's a really good West Coast recruiter. He's got a strong record as it relates to bringing new talent into a program. You know, we'll see what he can do on defense. They were really bad at takeaways last season, so that's probably a priority going into 2022. There's enough back to at least make it feel like this could work or that it should be better. I think Arizona will be better. It's not an easy schedule for a team of Arizona's caliber, but there aren't many easy schedules when you go 1-11. So if you're in rebuild mode, pretty much everything is difficult. I like this team. You know, not necessarily to go on some sort of crazy run through the Pac-12 South, not necessarily to go out there and win 7 games. But if you told me that Arizona was flirting with 5 wins, I would say I totally see it. I think there will be enough steam on this team that Jed Fish is going to have them motivated enough to be plucky. And I expect they'll pull an upset. I don't know over whom, but I expect at some point along the way, you know, they'll find a way to pull an upset. They've got USC after a bye, after their bye.
Yeah.
So that one's at home. They play ASU, obviously, last game of the year. They got Mississippi State in Tucson, North Dakota State.
I was going to say, their September is insane.
Tough. It's tough, right? That's what I'm saying. It's tough for it's tough for a almost anybody, but certainly a 1-11 team. But I just feel like this team is definitely in a much better spot than it was a year ago. And if you told me that they're pulling an upset and challenging for, you know, 5 wins, I'd say, yeah, count me in.
Okay. So they might win 2 games. okay? Their schedule is brutal. Mm-hmm. Like, they could lose their first three games comfortably. Well, San Diego State, they're not. Nobody's going to lose to San Diego State comfortably just because I don't think they have the offense. But in terms of what their schedule provides in terms of obvious competitive matchups, there's not much. Like, you could be down on Cal. I think Cal will be fine. And that game's at Cal.
Yeah.
You can be down on ASU. That's still a rivalry game, still at the end of the season. We don't know injuries, whatever. You know, stranger things have happened that a down rival wins the big game. I mean, freaking the last regular season game we saw was Navy beating Army, was it not?
Yep.
So, I'm not saying that that's, I mean, it's definitely winnable given where ASU could fall to, but there's not a lot obvious on the schedule.
I can tell from the timbre of your voice that you think I'm crazy, and that's fine, Dan.
I just think five wins this year is too much. I think three wins is interesting.
Flirting. With five.
Okay.
Flirting with five. I could see them beating Cal, Colorado, and ASU.
Okay.
Even though I kind of like ASU.
They beat Cal last year, right?
Yeah. I think ASU will be just all over the map this year. Wild cardy and who they could beat, but also wild cardy and who they could lose to. If you're finding a way to tack on two other wins, maybe they could beat San Diego State week one.
Sure.
You know, maybe they'll beat North Dakota State. I don't know. I think five wins is possible. I'm not saying that that is my prediction.
Yeah, I mean, the defense isn't there. The talent level's improved, but overall the defense isn't there. The offensive line's not there. And I think Jaden Delore is, I think he's pretty decent, but is he decent behind this line? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I think they're gonna play pretty hard. I think they're going to play with intention on both sides of the ball. I just think it's a Jimmy's and Joe's kind of thing. For Arizona at the moment, but I think they're approaching things correctly. I would love for them to have secret spies on every single Big Ten campus and get in the ears. I want them to tamper. I want them to be Tamper U. I want them to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I want them, excuse me. I want to be able to speak freely on this show, Ty.
Of course.
Every single decent offensive lineman who's unable to crack the rotation early in the Big Ten should see what the swimming pools look like on or near the Tucson campus of the University of Arizona.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying is if you're in Iowa City, if you're in State College, if you're in Minneapolis, just take a visit.
Yeah.
Take a visit to the Sonoran Desert where the humans are beautiful and the Mexican food is far superior to wherever you are. That's all I'm alluding to. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the University of Arizona. I am a legacy. I'm a Wildcat legacy, so I have some emotional skin in the game with Arizona's success. But I'm ready for it, man. I'm ready for a new power in the desert because when they're pretty good, if not really good, that stadium is super fun. The fans get super into it. I love it. So it's not this year.
No, it's not. It's not this year. But if you're telling me the over-under is 2.5, I'm going over, baby. I'm going over. I feel good about this team and the direction it's headed. It seems like it makes sense to me. So,
okay.
Call me crazy. I don't care. Won't be the first time. But four or five wins for me.
It's not too late, T-Mac. It's not too late.
That's all I have for the Pac-12 South, Dan.
That was pretty good by you.
Was it?
Yeah, I think so. Where should we begin with the Mountain West? West.
Who's winning the Mountain West? West. Who's the best?
Fresno
team?
State, San Joaquin Valley Zone. Yeah, I mean, I believe them to have the best offense in the conference, depending on what Air Force is able to, I guess. Jalen Cropper and Jake Haner. I just think they're going to be very successful with Jeff Tedford returning. The schedule's pretty good. Like, they're at Boise, but otherwise, I think it's pretty decent. The offensive line is a question. The defense returns a ton. San Diego State's at home, and they have Oregon State at home, and they travel to USC. But in terms of winning the Mountain West West, I think I'm a Fresno guy.
Okay. Beyond Fresno.
Yeah.
In the West. Is it
Who's good?
Is it San Diego State and then nobody else good? What does it look like?
I guess.
Because it's kind of thin, right?
It's pretty thin. Hawaii's starting over. You want to feel old? New head coach is Timmy Chang.
Man.
Once again, a little reminder. Timmy Chang,
thanks.
New head coach at Hawaii. Good for Timmy. Good for the Warriors. But it's going to take some work there. Do you know who Nevada's presumed or at least competing for the starting quarterback job? At Nevada is our guy, Shane Illingworth,
oh, wow.
Coming over from Oklahoma State.
Shaggy Shane is back.
Shaggy Shane Illingworth in Nevada. They need some work. It's just a very new squad with as much as Jay Norvell completely bled them dry.
Jay Norvell came with the school bus.
Yeah. Ken Wilson, though, with experience there. He was Oregon's linebackers coach, maybe a co-defensive coordinator as well. And so he's well-regarded within the conference. So he was at Washington State before Oregon. So a lot of connections to the West Coast. And I think there's a lot of optimism with Ken Wilson. They're at Iowa, at Air Force, and the good news is San Diego State and Fresno both in Reno. So I think they're going to be interesting, but I think it's going to take a year or two. UNLV, new home to Harrison Bailey from Tennessee.
Wow.
They had a decent enough quarterback last year, and they ran the ball pretty well last year. One of the worst pass defenses in America. That's an easy way to go 4-8. And their road schedule this year at Cal, at Utah State, at San Diego State, at Notre Dame. UNLV on their quest to get to a bowl game, but they do have Fresno at home. Yeah, their offensive line is just so far away from being where it needs to be for this to be an interesting offense every week, all week, whatever. Defense needs a lot. San Diego State, I mentioned earlier, Braxton Burmeister, still eligible, comes in for San Diego State, and I believe he's their fourth quarterback in 4 years. But honestly, in terms of what I like to call the alley-oop, like, the defense is going to put the offense in a really good position pretty much every week because a lot return on this defense. It should, again, be probably one of the best dozen defenses in the sport. So there's just a lot to build on. New offensive line in front of Braxton Burmeister, though. Not my favorite thing if I'm an Aztec fan. But would you say Snapdragon Stadium?
Snapdragon, yeah, Snapdragon.
Is that some sort of tech thing?
Yeah,
Snapdragon. Is that a processor, a chip?
It's a chip, yeah.
Is it its own company or is it like an AMD, an Intel? What is it? Are they aligned with somebody else?
It's a Qualcomm brand.
Oh, that makes sense. Qualcomm's in, yeah, Qualcomm Stadium.
A chip, yeah. It's a suite of systems on a chip.
San Jose State, Siobhan Cordero, transfer within conference, coming in from Hawaii after the disaster that was the Todd Graham era on the islands. Supposedly. Yes. The offensive line in front of him will not be great. They hit the portal for receivers, which I can appreciate. That's a nice thing to do for your quarterback, your new quarterback. Good amount of star power and a good amount of guys back on defense. So San Jose State, after their Nick Starkel-led, 1920 renaissance, took a step back last year. I think they should be a bowl team again this year. At Auburn, at Fresno, at San Diego State, at Utah State. So they're going to have to do it away from the friendly confines of San Jose State. Eat at Mexico Bakery, by the way. I mentioned Hawaii. Just a huge portal exodus. Just a lot of guys leaving, including, I think before Todd Graham was relieved of his duties or stepped down, I think his son entered the portal. Never a good sign. Never a good sign. Hope it works out for everybody involved. It was a decently explosive offense last year. But otherwise, you can imagine how things went, considering how much of a revolt there seemed to be within the locker room.
Oh my gosh, that was
after
horrible.
The season. So it'll be a full overhaul on defense. It's going to take a little while, but from a narrative and story perspective, certainly cool that Tommy Chang is the guy Timmy Chang. Did I keep saying Tommy?
Yeah.
Like, I think I'm saying Timmy Chang, not Tommy Chung. It's very difficult for me at times. Timmy Chang, of course, who we watched throw for a bajillion yards as quarterback and is a legend at Hawaii. Vandy, Western Kentucky, and at Michigan to begin the season. San Diego State and Fresno both on the road. Nashville to Honolulu, Ty.
Yeah.
That's a road game this year.
Okay.
For the Doors. And then finally, they're not in the Mountain West, but BYU is a team that we definitely should be talking about because they're going to win a bunch of games this year. They're going to have a really good offense this year. And Jaren Hall being back for, I think, his fifth year in Provo. You can quote me on that. I don't know. I'm probably wrong, but I think it's about that. The defense needs to get better. They were beat up last year. They did well enough stopping big plays, but the news is the star power on offense with Jaren Hall, I think it's the Cal transfer Christopher Brooks at running back because Tyson Algier is now in the NFL. He's now, I think he's a Falcon. Does that sound right to you, Ty?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tyson Algier, it should be a good offensive line, and there's a ton back on defense to get better. They just need to stay healthier. They were so beat up last year. So if that's the case, and their schedule includes a visit to Eugene, Oregon, they have Notre Dame in Vegas, followed by Arkansas in Provo.
Yeah.
They're at Boise and at Stanford, however dangerous or not dangerous you feel Stanford is. So tricky, but not, I don't think, like, I mean, they were the Pac-12 champs last year. Not as crazy as it was last year.
According to a Qualcomm spokesperson,
yeah,
it was named Snapdragon because, quote, Snap and Dragon sounded fast and fierce.
I think it's a good name. You know how to spell Snap and Dragon.
Yeah.
You get the imagery of something quickly and fiercely and violently moving, and that's what I think you want from your Qualcomm chips.
Have you seen pictures of the stadium?
No. Does it look great?
It looks awesome. Yeah.
Future Pac-12 team.
There
or
you go.
Big 12. Who knows? By the way, what are we, about an hour 15 into this show? We just finished a Pac-12 preview. We did the North. This episode was the South. And I just want to say, I love this conference. I don't care what the LA TV market says. I know I'm a homer. I'm from the West Coast. I'm from Southern California. I went to Oregon. I know there's a lot of what I'm considering to be catastrophic defenses in this conference. I hear me. Okay. But I just think with the narrative of this offseason being what it has been, with USC and UCLA in tow, leaving for the Big Ten to be a friggin' sunglass hut in the mall that will become college football. Yeah, that's right. The California kiosk. How about that? There's so much great history to this conference, like recent history. We're not going back to like the 80s or not. Forget all of that. That I just want to put some respect on the Pac-12's name, Ty. And I want to say to, should we just name a bunch? To Nate Longshore, to Christian McCaffrey, to the Rogers brothers, to Keith Price, to Chris Magehe, to Aaron Flugrad, to Demetrius Williams, to Josh Nunez, to the guys that I exclusively text with Brandon Huffman about, where we just text each other their names, to Danny Farmer, who's a good like UCLA running back from like right around 2000?
Skip Hicks
is a great one, Ty. I just want to say I love this conference, and even if it only has two more years left or four more years left, and people are gonna pick at the waist, whatever. I just want to say, Pac-12, I love you. And I hope you succeed, and I will always root for your success. And I'm glad we could have this little moment for everybody. Once again, Ty, Pac-12, I will always love you.
It's getting a little dusty in here, Dan.
Safo Lufau? Come on, Ty, join me. Who else? Who do you have? What did I, Sammy Parker? How about Justin Finnessy? How about Mike Haas?
Brock Osweiler.
I will name every gritty receiver.
Mike Bercovici.
How about J.J. Arrington?
Oh, wow. Good one.
How about, oh, what's his name? Willie Tuatama. Manny Wilkins. I can do this all day. Just naming Pac-12 players. I'm actually getting a little bit choked up, Ty.
Cody Hawkins.
I really, Stevie Montez.
Scotty McKnight.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that one. Oh my God, Darren Thomas.
We have come off the
Jeremiah Masoli.
We have come off the rails here.
Joe Ayoub.
Rudy Carpenter. God. All right.
Oh, my God. We didn't even get into any of the giant ASU quarterbacks. Sam Keller.
I mentioned Brock Osweiler.
He's at Bercovici and Brock Osweiler. Okay, that's fair. Okay. Rudy Carpenter.
Keegan Herring.
Oh, great one, Ty. Well done. Well struck.
All right. That does it for our conference previews as we go into 2022. A bit losing our gourd, but that's okay.
That's okay. By the way, people will have listened to that show for about an hour 20, and possibly the thing that got them most worked up was like, why didn't they say Cade McNown's name? Why? And that's fair. That's okay. We're all in this together.
Rudy Burgess. Oh my gosh. Okay. Look, thank you to one and all for hanging with us as we went through 10 episodes of conference previews. Go back and listen to them all if you haven't yet. Hit subscribe if you like this show. If you want more of this show, we do 3 episodes a week now as we get into the heart of the season. We are doing our very first live show of the year on August the 27th in Chicago, doing our Fantasy Things show. Going out to solidverbalive.com, buy your tickets. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're very excited about it. We're also doing 3 other shows in New York, Atlanta, and LA throughout the course of the next 6 months or so. We would encourage you to go on out again to solidverbalive.com if you are ever so inclined to buy tickets to come see us live and hang out with other Verballers. If you can't make it in person, you can go to verballers.com. That's a great place to hang out with other folks who like the show, listen to the show, who enjoy it as much as you do. That is our Patreon, verballers.com. We have a couple different access tiers, which are available to you. All of them give you access to these episodes early, which is a cool feature that I think we're able to offer. You can also get access to our Discord server and some of the other perks as we get into the season with games and whatnot. Verballers.com is where you can go to find more about that. Our website, solidverbal.com, newly relaunched solidverbal.com. Did a little bit of a renovation to get things up to speed in time for the 2022 college football season. And last but not least, if you want to help us with social media, the email address is apply@solidverbal.com. We need to see your portfolio, see what you've done before, because we need help, Dan. We need help. Somebody who's cut video, somebody who knows social platforms, somebody who wants to help us out in beaming our content out to the social universe.
And it's an email address. Apply@solidverbal.com.
There's not
a form on solidverbal.com, to be clear. A couple more things, Ty, real quick. Hercules Mataafa. Vontaze Burfict. Ty Montgomery.
Can this be the new show? Can this just be the show?
I think we should dip into the Discord occasionally and just randomly dip into the audio channel and say, all right, for the next 18 minutes, we're all going to take turns just saying names of dudes from whatever conference.
Yeah.
And we'll just dip in and we'll just start talking dudes' names. And you know what? I think what will happen is people will dip in, they will start hearing names, and they'll sit back in their chair and say, yeah, of course, of course. And it makes us happy. That's all.
Ed Dixon.
That's a good one. Played two ways, tight end and defensive end. Yeah.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for hanging with us through this long preview season. We are excited to get things underway. We'll be back next week. Talk some over-unders, talk some actual college football. In the meantime, for that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much for downloading, for listening. Catch y'all next week. Stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.